back after a 9-month hiatus. My very first guest that I ever had when the show was called Tomorrow's Business Today, now it's Technori Live. George Boosis, the CEO and founder of Raise.com, is sitting here next to me. He's going to tell us all of the new happenings in the Raise world. George, welcome to the show.
Thanks again for having me.
This is awesome to me. I mean, you were literally the first guest that I had at WGN. I was a complete fake it till you make it at that point. I don't even know what I sent Megan to get you on the show in the first place.
But we've all been there, right? I mean, it's whatever it takes, you know, and I think it's always fun to help continue supporting the community and helping everyone else out. You know, we all started somewhere, so happy to be part of it.
I agree. Thank you very much. So I guess, you know, like I said in the intro, it's been 9 months since you've been on the show here when we started it up. It's hard to believe that that's it feels like it's a long time since I've had you on the show, but it feels like how could this show only be 9 months old, basically?
Yep.
And it's already grown this to this point. It's crazy. In the last 9 months, Raise has gone from I knew about Raise. A lot of people in the tech community knew about Raise. You know, people that are tech savvy, millennials knew about Raise. Now it's literally on billboards everywhere. It's on buses when I go by. Why don't you give us kind of a little update of what Raise has accomplished in the last 9 months?
Yeah, I don't even know where to begin. I mean, 9 months in kind of startup land is almost feels like it's 9 years
it's a decade,
sometimes.
Yeah.
But you know, it's just a lot of branding. We've been trying to get a little bit out there and test a lot of our messaging, kind of getting a better understanding of how people are connecting with the brand. And, you know, does it make sense? Do they understand what we do? Can we test conversion? Does offline marketing actually work? As far as kind of the company itself, I guess kind of on both ends, the one side culturally as a company continues to grow, I think in the last 9 months, we probably hired something like, you know, 200 or so odd people. So always managing that growth and people and everything on that's associated with that is always difficult.
Yeah.
At any time, you know, having to expand more office space and having to manage onboarding that many people is always a challenge. I would say more on the technical side, you know, just continue growing the product. You know, we're really starting to work a lot closer and a lot more intimately with the retailers now on a ton of different capacities. But, you know, just a lot of things going on. I mean, we just recently announced an acquisition, which was our second one and went really smoothly. Awesome team of, you know, engineers and product folks and, you know, business development that we're going to be integrating and have been integrating over the last 2 weeks. Going to be now expanding to New York. So I was there yesterday signing an office lease. So just a lot of things going on.
That's awesome. So, I mean, I guess one of the, well, first off, you know, there are a handful of people that haven't seen the Raise.com sign driving down the middle of the road. So what is Raise.com, just for those who don't know?
Simply put, we've built an exchange for gift cards that connects buyers and sellers on one end looking to sell their gift cards for cash. On the buy side, looking to buy discounted cards to all their favorite brands. So essentially helping customers make their money worth more at all the places that they love.
I love using Raise. I think it's interesting, you know, when we first talked, we were really focused on talking about like what it is, what the platform is, and like how it could be useful to people. And now to see that you've developed to the point where you've sort of perfected like what it is, and now we're working with the actual, you know, like JCPenney's or whoever it is, the gift card issuer,
yep,
to better align what they're doing with the future of gift,
sure,
card market.
Yeah, I mean, it's evolving a lot. And I think in any type of industry, you almost have to focus on how you disrupt yourself as,
yeah,
a company and where the business is headed. I mean, we've seen over the years, you know, how many companies have come and gone because they haven't been willing to invest in technology and innovation in the future of the industry and the world around us. Sometimes it's not just about, you know, where your business is at today, but it's where's the world going tomorrow and how do we continue to invest there? So, you know, we're really investing heavily in R&D, in technology, you know, as we continue to mature as a business, almost becoming more like a mobile payments platform, which,
yep,
is all about discovery and building kind of this network where the retailers can connect directly with consumers. And I think that's what really disrupts this whole mobile wallet phenomenon that we continue to see so much about.
You know, I think what's particularly interesting in this conversation is the fact that you mentioned you're already trying to disrupt your own stuff,
yep,
which I think is an interesting concept all into itself, because you are a disruptive company and you're not an old company. Like, it's,
yep,
you've not been around that long, and yet you guys have to disrupt yourselves. And I think it's interesting about that is if you look at, so, I mean, take really any disruptive company. They have come onto the scene, they found a niche, a place that they can execute well and that they can do things to sort of change the way that things are done in the past. And then what ends up happening is a million little knockoffs start popping up. And it's like, all right, we have to actually change ourselves already this quickly, even though we're trying to chase after a giant, you know, like gift cards have been around for a decade. You worked on numerous, if I remember from our first interview.
Yeah, I mean, you constantly have to evolve. And, you know, it's, you have to also take advantage of the position that you're in, you know, being the market leader, being the biggest by far. You know, it's having that trust from the retailers, it's having that consumer base, and continuing to think almost really like, how do I put our current business out of business by thinking of what the next wave or the next biggest company looks like, and how we can use what we learned in the infrastructure and all that to build what can be much larger. And so I always talk about with the team of, how do we build a $100 billion business? Not, you know, how we build a you know, $1, $2, or $5 billion business. And I really think that you have to think of those moonshot ideas, the big things that really change behaviors and disrupt really large industries. So it's, how do we, you know, look at what we learned in the, you know, multi-hundred-billion-dollar gift card space and evolve to now focus on the, you know, $25 trillion international retail space. Whereas, you know, we much rather be a player in that space than just be, you know, limited to gift cards.
It's funny. It's like you read my notes here. So one of the things I actually had written down, people don't understand just how crazy the difference is between running a multi-million and a multi-hundred million or billion-dollar company. Yep. One of the quotes I've seen, I don't know who said it, but uber successful people do more with one day than the average folk does in a week.
Yep.
And I think that that speaks really well to what you just said. I mean, the bottom line is, if you're not, and there's only a handful of people who have, forget about the knowledge and the background to know how to do it, but the imagination, or the, for lack of a better term, like the guts to be thinking of something so astronomically large that it's almost hard to put into
terms. And I mean, Uber's a phenomenal business, but, you know, you see that they're continuing to stay hungry and focus at not only how do we continue to expand and grow our business now, you know, especially you see a lot with what they're doing in China and how much they're investing internationally, but now they have a whole side of the company which is investing in autonomous cars and disrupting themselves so they continuously stay ahead of the curve. And I think that's what all the best companies do. And, you know, that's what we're really investing heavily in and continuing to focus on.
I've got a question for you in this same kind of realm, and it's, you don't have to answer it. But the question I have for you would be, do you think that this is a future way of doing business where, as you grow, you will always stay nimble no matter how big you get? You'll always stay nimble and be working on it from the standpoint of breaking ourselves down and then rebuild, versus how things got stagnant for a lot of companies, even innovative companies, that grow and they sort of end up toppling.
Well, it was funny. I was actually just speaking with another friend who I admire deeply, you know, Rishi at Context, with what they've done. And a huge part of our conversation was all about, sometimes you have to slow down to speed up in the long term. And a lot of that is focusing on, how do you continue to be big but operate like a small business and be nimble and be quick, and continue to focus on innovation. You know, if we're going to call ourselves a technology company, we need to be a technology platform, which means not just throwing people at the problem, it's throwing a process, it's creating a series of automation. And that doesn't go without saying that, you know, we don't love, you know, not having to create jobs and doing all, like, that's great, right? We'd love to do that. But at the same time, we want to get to massive amounts of scale without having to scale our operations or our headcount and all that. And I think it just overall creates a more unique and a better experience for the consumers. And so we're really focused on, you know, being nimble, being a tight-knit group, continuing to iterate and focus and still feel like a small, you know, startup company.
How do you do that with the thread of your company inside of your own office? I know you've got an awesome offices, and you said that you're now going to be out in New York and doing that sort of thing. How do you keep sort of the ethos of what Raise was? How do you keep it that way, even though you're hiring 200 new people?
So culture, again, is huge. You know, in culture, it really comes down to character first. It's you know, what your team values, who they are, what motivates them, what gets them excited. And it's making everyone feel like, you know, your success is their success, and what they're doing actually has a direct contribution to the business and where we're headed and where we're going as a company. And so it's getting everyone talking to each other. It's communicating. It's being a technology company, but sometimes not only relying on technology. So meaning, you know, we're sitting there, you know, you're next to someone, you're using Slack, you're sending them a note, just get up, move around, talk to them. And that's why we kind of have this whole open benching system. We try to get everyone to interact with each other, to have engineers working with, you know, folks in ops, and getting, you know, creative support, product support. So it's just getting everyone involved. And whether that means, you know, getting on the phones, whether that means being part of any new product developments that are going on. We really try to get everyone working with one another and still maintaining that small company feel.
That's one of the concerns I actually have with regard to, like, I like Slack fine. We use all kinds of different tools and Trello and whatever. But one of the things I don't like about it, it works if you've got, like, you're in New York and everyone's moving around, like, I get it. I don't like the fact that it takes away the ability to physically meet and have a multidisciplinary team, which is what you're talking about, having guys working from ops, yep, marketing and creative and so forth, where they sort of just like post it on the Slack board and that's like their contact point, rather than actually talking to the guy or the girl and saying, you know, this is developing some sort of rapport so you know what you're doing. I feel like that's, you're doing that obviously.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, we're guilty of it, right? I mean, you almost rely too heavily on the tools that we use. And that's with anything. I mean, it's in development and product, you know, using Pivotal or tracking, yep, new things that we're, shipping to production. I think for us, sometimes, again, we step back and we create these visual boards where anyone and everyone from the company can walk up to them and see exactly what's going on in the product roadmap, what's engineering working on. And so it's trying to bring a lot of that human element back to what we're actually doing. And again, we can constantly improve, we can always get better, but, sometimes it's just, it just kind of comes to the territory. You have so much going on, and it's a great way to consolidate a lot of the, sure, materials that you're working on.
So, I mean, obviously you've had some amazing changes in the company, good changes, huge growth. What impact does that have on your life, not just personally, but, as an entrepreneur? I always feel like entrepreneurs themselves are sort of the perpetual freelancer, right? They're always working on different things. They've always got kind of a creative mission. How does the success of Raise and the fact that you're now a recognizable character? You mentioned Rishi Shah. You were on the panel with him at Tech Week, which I was at, which was awesome. Thank you again for coming, yep, to that. How has it changed you, like, as a person in general?
I don't think it's necessarily changed me as an individual. I think, what we're so blessed and fortunate with is, when growing a business, you meet really great people. Yep. You meet other great entrepreneurs. You kind of tap into that network and continue to build that network. And I've just been lucky to meet other fantastic entrepreneurs, other, founders of their companies, executives. I mean, kind of you name it. But I think what many times when we look at, as we were talking about social media and, yeah, all that, you kind of see only the 1% that goes on, and if that, yeah, of everyone's.
What we're talking about is the fact you have 66,000 Twitter followers on your verified account, which I'm super, super jealous of.
Yeah, continue. I mean, and it's almost, it's the hype and all that, and it's really less than 1%, and it's almost the highlight reel of your life. But, I think sometimes we forget to look at what's the other 99% of the time that you're spending, grinding and focusing on building a company. And, and it's the same story actually for your company too, is a lot of times people don't realize how difficult it is. And it's not just difficult when you're beginning. Every day, it actually gets harder and harder. It doesn't actually get easier and easier because you're managing a lot more people. You're managing a lot more personalities, products, customers. There's a lot on the line. And so you constantly have to stay hungry. You can't get comfortable, because it's the companies that get comfortable that feel like they've made it, that, this is success, this is what it's all about, that, quickly either go out of business or face challenges. And so, you constantly have to just be focused on your work and everything else just kind of happens.
Yeah.
And again, I've done some really cool stuff. I've met some really cool people, but I think what just gets me most excited is not that. It's growing a business. It's working, side by side with, the almost 400 or so odd people that we have at the office. That's what brings me joy.
I think, so there's two things to this. One, to your point about the 1%, I had Adam Galinsky, professor from Penn and Columbia, who's the author of Friend and Foe, who actually was on the show talking about that exact thing, that a lot of people, when they rely on looking at people who've done many amazing things, legendary things, they don't realize how much sacrifice it took to get there. And all they actually see is that 1% of their life, which is the glorified part, and don't realize what it took. So to that point, I mean, obviously that's a huge missing component, I think, from what people know, what your daily life is like. Oh, look, there's George. He's got this great thing. Yeah. There's George at midnight working. There's George at 1 a.m. working.
Yeah,
there's,
I mean,
George, fixing a crash.
Probably a little later too,
Well, well, exactly.
And it's one of those things, it's just, you have to stay humble. You have to stay hungry. And I always told everyone, like, the second I stop caring and I'm not hungry, yep, anymore is the second I should look for someone else to yep, put in that position, because I'm not doing justice to our most important shareholders, which are our employees. And so, you know, if we're not doing right by them, how are we doing right by our investors and everyone else that, you know, has been continuing to support us and has support us through everything? And so, you know, it's making those difficult decisions sometimes. It's continuing to stay on the path and staying focused on, you know, what's the strategy of business? What's the vision? How do we continue to, you know, realize that vision, you know, albeit sometimes making the difficult decisions, albeit sometimes, you know, making ones that you may feel, you know, in the short term, have a real material effect on the business, but you always have to continue to say, are we building a business for the next 6 months, for the next quarter, yep, for the next year? Are we building a business, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, that can be a huge business or a generational like business?
Well, I mean, that's the reason that I have you sitting here again, to be honest, because you're one of the few people that I've met, just about everyone in this community, one of the few people who I absolutely respect. The minute I met you, I could tell that you were one of those guys who just wanted to get this done, hell or high water, gonna work. And the obsession is not about what I get to do with the money or what I get to do with this or that. It's just the building. The obsession was with building this. You had an idea,
yep,
and then it was like, all right, well, how do we make this better? And then that got a lot of kudos. That's a great time for people to collapse. You didn't. You built it into something more.
Yeah, and you just have to. I mean, it's you know, my father taught me this really early. It's focused on building a great product and building a great experience. The money and all that comes. But I mean, the reality is, I mean, the money doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
Money comes and goes, and sometimes it's not just, you know, you or the company or anything else. Just sometimes just shit happens,
yep,
you know. And you know, at the end of the day, I think you just have to stay focused and live for today and live in the moment and continue to focus on where you want to be as a company and who you aspire to be and how you can continue to keep everyone motivated. And you know, it still is still a dice roll at that point. And so, you know, you have to just work hard and hope for the best and, you know, plan for the worst in any event.
I think if you wake up and you are not excited about the dice roll, you're in the wrong business.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if it's not what keeps you up at night and wakes you up in the morning, you know, there's a problem. And I tell everyone it's focus on building, you know, a legacy.
Yep.
It's not the paycheck. It's not what's now. It's what do you want to be known for later? And, you know, there will be eventually one day that we all pass. And the balance of our checkbooks, our stock ticker, or whatever else it is, you know, is not on that stone. It's the impact that you had in people's lives and who you were as an individual and, you know, what you contributed to society. And I think that side comes more from my mother, with everything, who's taught us to be compassionate and be very grateful. But, you know, we've been truly blessed. You know, I mean, God has been so good to us. And, you know, it's obviously really important to me.
Well, I think you're building quite a legacy yourself. So thank you again, George, for coming in here. Where do people go to follow Raise and learn more about Raise.com? And also, how can we add to your 66,000 Twitter followers?
Just, you know, Raise.com. We have apps both on Android and iOS. And my handle's at Gboosis. But, you know, sometimes try to give a little bit of conventional wisdom and everything else that comes with the territory. But, you know.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, George, for coming in. I know you're a busy guy.
Great. Thanks so much.
You can stream this episode and more on the WGN Plus app or download each episode on iTunes. Please stay connected by following us on Twitter at TechNori and follow me at Katun, KITUN. Boom. That's a wrap.